Welcome to Mixture Stories, an open-ended fantasy and sci-fi podcast for kids. We have invented a world that our imagination can explore, and you are invited to join us by listening and adding your ideas for future episodes.
We try to write each story so that although they are linked, you don't have to listen to them in any particular order. Tonight's episode is the exception. If you haven't already heard number 11, Echoes, we'd strongly suggest that you start there first. You might also want to check out number 17, Turn of Events, as well. But for now, just sit back, relax, and close your eyes as we listen to episode 20, Mirror Image.
It was the longest night of the year in the Northern Hemisphere on Alusha, a traditional time of great celebration in anticipation of the return of the gloriously long hours of ochre sunlight that lay ahead. The higher northern latitudes languished in the twilight for nearly half of the year. When the days grew shorter, the Alushans followed the flits, an indigenous flighted animal that used to fold a skin like a parasail, to the equatorial regions where the light was closer to constant. The capital, located just north of latitude zero, had long since become a mecca for the migrating populations. Like all resort cities, it had a constantly shifting population, supported by a small core of permanent residents who were mostly engaged in servicing the needs of the migrants and cleaning up after them in the brief periods between the invading hordes. Serene stood transfixed by the festival scene. A second ago, she could have sworn she was standing in the simulated world, arguing with an obstinate computer-generated character.
How'd I get here?
She asked herself. Unconscious of her gaze, the celebrations continued outside.
The Festival of Light. I'm on Alusha.
But things were not quite as she remembered them. The ancient buildings of the capital's public square looked like they had just been unboxed, and there were other ones that she had never even seen before. Looking again, she realized that many of the structures she had grown up with were not present at all.
I must be in the past. But when?
Before she could answer herself, a deep voice boomed out.
I call to order the Council of the Predictions.
Serene spun away from the glass wall to face a chamber filled with white-robed Alushans. The space had been full with low murmurs, but grew instantly silent in tense anticipation of the speaker's next words. Before anyone noticed her presence, Serene slipped into a vacant seat in the back row. She searched her memory, but she couldn't recall any council like this.
What predictions? What council? What are they talking about?
She thought as she raced through the obscure parts of her mind, looking for clues. Out of the corner of her eye, she noticed a small pocket in the seat next to her, from which the top of a well-used dog-eared book shyly poked up. She reached over, removed it, and began to inspect its cover. The title read, The Quantum Manipulation Predictions, the official edition based on the original but now lost text. The next part of the title was worn so badly that Serene could hardly make it out. She angled the book so the overhead lights caught the edges of old embossed letters, and the remnants of an A, an R, and AN struggled to keep from revealing themselves. Then tilting the book in another direction, a publication date emerged. It was just past the point in time she'd come from. Unable to fill in the missing characters, Serene's attention drifted back to the speaker on the podium.
The recent accidental death of Dr. Sirk during a quantum manipulation experiment only adds to the overwhelming and indisputable evidence that the predictions in the ancient text handed to us from the future are indeed correct. Dr. Sarek is assigned to us all, and the book, in its wisdom, predicted this day and warns that to change our destiny, using his malignant discoveries, will only result in creating a future worse than the end of our culture.
No!
No, our destiny has already been written, and we are entering into the twilight of our world. We must accept it. Something stirred in Serene's mind. Part of what the speaker was saying combined with fractal memories and subconsciously mixed. Then the puzzle pieces finally fit together, causing a cascade of realization that stormed out of her subconscious and overwhelmed her conscious mind with a simple thought.
Adrian, what have you done?
There are those of you who say we should use this new power to change events so the prediction will not come true. And as I speak, there are those of us who are blindly pursuing this insane course. They believe that they, and they alone, have the wisdom to change what has already been divined, to create new destiny, to change what is preordained, using the very knowledge we have been warned about. But I say, should we allow them to?
No!
A chorus of no's spontaneously broke out in the audience. You are right, dear members, and you are right to object. And we not only have the right to protest to the research, but we are morally bound to stop it.
They ignore the wisdom of the book.
Someone shouted, and others quickly agreed. Yes, they choose to be blind to the path laid out before them. How long can we allow this insanity to continue? I ask you that. Provoked, the crowd broke into a wild frenzy. Its intensity frightened Serene. At this point in their history, the Aleutians were supposed to have put their differences behind them. Desperately wanting to find a place to reflect, and before she could be singled out for her lack of enthusiasm, Serene discreetly left the hall. Once out in the square, she was swept away by a ruckus crowd of holiday revelers who greeted her with open arms. Their spirit and celebratory mood in stark contrast to the white-robed Aleutian she had just left. The festival ended in the early morning, with the exhausted crowds simply falling asleep on the nearby beaches. Serene slept fitfully in the warm tropic air, questions circling in her mind like a horde of angry bees. Tired, but unable to sleep anymore, she rose with the sun and decided to head off to the Science Council to seek some answers. As Serene wound her way back through the streets littered with the discards of the previous night's events, her thoughts changed to finding a way to return to her own time. Looking around and seeing no one, she sat down on a deserted bench and started to let her mind drop down into the familiar threads beneath the solid world. As she did, an odd thought occurred to her. At this point in history, she was the only person that could do this. Serene sat transfixed, exploring the hidden quantum reality, and lost track of time until a passerby tapped her on her shoulder to see if she was okay.
Do you need any help?
A young woman asked.
I'm fine. You know, the celebrations, I must have fallen asleep sitting up.
She stammered as she came out of her trance. To help reorient herself, Serene looked around. The street was beginning to fill up with determined crowds of morning commuters. She estimated that she had been in a trance for well over 2 hours. The attentive woman hung around to assure herself that Serene was just a tired reveler, then left. Slowly collecting her thoughts, Serene got up and started out again for the Science Council. Before being disturbed, she had discovered a familiar sequence, a pattern which she had recently experienced. Or, to be more precise, at this point in time, was going to repeat itself in the distant future on Ceres. Aleutia's winter solstice was a point of alignment, and a portal could be formed. She knew she had her ticket home, but it would happen within a day. That didn't give her long, so despite her tired body, she picked up her pace.
After an hour's arduous uphill walk, Serene arrived at the Science Council. In her day, the original complex had been torn down and replaced with an immense glass and carbon nanotube tower that was crowned with a graceful white dome of an observatory. But this complex looked run down and neglected. Its appearance puzzled her. The Science Council had always been powerful and well-funded, so the state of disrepair didn't sync with historical facts. Serene looked across the square and noticed some activity at the observatory building. Its dome was still open, and the great telescope was just now being shut down after a night of observation. Thinking that it would be her best bet, she headed toward an open side door. Entering the building, she discovered a single astronomer packing away her notes. Like the rest of the complex, the observatory interior was in bad need of repair. Serene tentatively approached.
"Good morning,"
she chirped. The astronomer, looking as weary as her equipment, responded by lifting her head from her work.
"Oh no, don't tell me that the administration has requested another budget cut. Can't they even leave it alone on a holiday? Tell them there's nothing left to cut. Unless they want to melt the telescope down and sell it for its base metals."
"I'm not from the administration."
The astronomer looked up with interest.
"No one ever comes here anymore. You know, with the discovery of quantum manipulation, what's the point? We've already proved there's no comet or asteroid that's going to hit Alusha. So we've disproved the predictions. What else is there? They've taken away most of the funding now. What we have left goes to QM.
QM?
Serene asked.
"Come on, where are you from? Quantum manipulation. QM, that's all the Science Council is interested in, and with the power that the Council of the Predictions has these days, they continue to strangle our budget, to thwart our QM research. So, in its great wisdom, our administration takes money from anywhere it can to continue. Building maintenance, if you haven't already noticed, and other areas of research, pension funds, salaries, whatever."
"Oh, sorry to hear that. I just came because I'm here for the festival, and I've always wanted to see the observatory."
The astronomer continued to pack away her observation notes.
"So, you're the only one left looking at the sky?"
Serene was already anticipating the answer.
"Just my team and myself. And everyone knows that we've managed to map all the objects in our solar system in the first 100 years after the discovery of the book. Those were the glory days of astronomy. After the map was completed, and the collision event predicted in the book disproven, interest, and even worse, research funds went elsewhere. But surely, even in the northern towns, they taught you this in school. Or has the Council of Predictions had its way with that education system as well?"
The astronomer finished packing and stood up to leave.
"But what if we've missed something? Couldn't the book have some factual basis?"
Serene pleaded.
"Look, don't listen to ads from the Council of Predictions. They're peddling fear and myth. I can assure you, with absolute professional certainty, that there is no killer asteroid. Now it's time for me to close up. If you're here after the holiday, there are regular public tours."
Serene felt a growing frustration at the stubborn inflexibility and arrogance that seemed to rule this version of her world.
"Come on, you can't predict everything. I mean, you can't even begin to perceive the complexity involved. Both the science and prediction councils could be wrong, but none of you are brave enough to admit it."
She turned and stomped out of the observatory, raising a cloud of dust as she left. The astronomer shrugged her shoulders.
"Tourists."
Serene made her way back through the capital to a remote point of land near the ocean. She sat down in the sand and let her mind slip into the subreal. She found the threads she was looking for, brought them together, and wove an opening to a future that looked similar to the one she had come from. She found the Council's training center on a small tropical planet and positioned the portal's end there, a bit past her original point of time in the future. Serene woke from her trance to see a rift broiling away in the air in front of her, an improbable tear in reality from which stars twinkled at her from its infinite depths. Without hesitation, she stood up, dusting the sand from her clothes, and stepped through. In the brief moment between the two realities, she had an odd thought. Was the Alusha she was leaving her own, or was it Adrian's? Then a sudden gust of warm, salty air caressed Serene's face, and she found herself standing with her feet in shallow, warm, turquoise water. Behind her, a young student was trying to get her attention.
"Hi there!"
The words mixed lazily with the sound of the ocean, making them initially hard to hear.
"Are you the new history instructor? I'm Fox."
Serene turned to see a rickety wharf heading out to a platform supported on a forest of erratically placed bamboo poles. Perched precariously on top was an empty, inviting-looking cafe. She turned and yelled back,
"Yes, I am."
Then smiled. She was going to like it here. Epilogue. Of anyone, Serene would understand how unintended small random events can sometimes result in immense and unpredictable consequences. As Serene marched out of the observatory that morning, a small but unique and distinctively shaped flake of white paint that had recently got fed up just hanging around dislodged itself from one of the telescope supports and fell to the floor where it was disturbed by her boots and floated back up into the air. Serene's odd encounter with the astronomer had delayed the closing of the observatory and driven up on an unexpected thermal created by the first light of one of Alusha's suns rising above the still open dome. The tiny white flake of paint floated up and up before settling on the edge of the lens of the great telescope. The next evening, a grad student made the amazing discovery of a previously unknown comet that appeared to be headed towards Alusha. Having been convinced that all the objects in their solar system had already been thoroughly mapped, this finding stunned the scientific community. After 2 weeks of secret deliberations, the Science Council quietly authorized a modest project taken from a QM budget to confirm the findings. Part of the budget included cleaning and upgrading the telescope to increase the accuracy of the measurements. While the telescope was being refurbished, a real uncharted comet on a collision course with the planet came into range, and when the observations were restarted, the existence of the comet was quickly confirmed. Not wanting to admit that they might have been wrong, the Science Council put all its resources into a clandestine effort to deflect the comet by attaching a huge solar sail to it. The project was wildly successful, and the comet never even became visible to the naked eye of an observer on Alusha. When the fateful date of the great predicted event to end history came and went without incident, the Science Council sat smugly around in its chambers, gleefully planning how it would spend the new generous funding that was certain to come their way now that the Council of the Predictions had finally got enough egg on its pompous face to become irrelevant. In their turn, the Council of Predictions quietly receded from public view for almost 5 years. At that point in time, in another parallel universe, Alusha was hit and almost destroyed by a comet. Those Alushans had learned to excel at quantum manipulation and reached down into the basement of reality and switched worlds. Many of the scientists, through an error in calculation, were transferred as well. The predictionists, by an odd twist of fate, all remained behind on their suddenly half-ruined planet, eagerly admitted their initial mistake, and reinterpreted the dates in the Book of Predictions to fit what had happened, then returned to power.
Thanks for listening to Episode 20, Mirror Image. This is the last story in the current cycle. In 2010, we'll be taking selected characters to explore new plots and situations. The season will start off with Lukey and company in a new adventure. But for now, we're taking a break until near the end of January, so look for the first story in 2010 around the last week of the month. Once again, all sound effects for this episode came from soundsnap.com, and the opening theme was played by David. Please check out our site at makeshiftstories.com for more program notes and other information.